Okay, we're beginning here on the bottom of Kaf Hei Amud Bet by the Gemara. Mishnah discussed the issue of Temed, which Rashi claims over here that Temed is running water through Hartzanim, pits of the grapes that were left over from the pressing of the grapes. On the other hand, the Balei HaTosafot over here indicate that Temed is really passing the water through the Shmarim, through the sediments of the pressed grapes. And Tosafot says there is a difference between those two, and it really relates to the Gemara in Pesachim and the two different Lashonot in the Gemara as to whether there is any difference between them. But either way, we're speaking about water that's being passed through some sort of residual from the pressing of the grapes. And what it does is it absorbs in that water some of that residue that causes later on to be fermentation of the water. So the water turns into a type of wine or fermented wine because of that residue that gets captured by the water when it's flushed through the shmarim or flushed through the chartzanim. The question is, what is the status of that temet? Both because in the beginning, it's basically water until it really ferments, and the possibility that it won't ferment. I mean, it's not always a successful operation. In fact, that you're going to end up with a product in the end that is temet and not water. So that's the nature of the Mishnah over here, which discussed that temet, achlo yichmitz enu nikach bekesef maser. Before it becomes fermented, you can't purchase it with Maaser Sheni monies. Maaser Sheni monies have to be used on food items inside of Yerushalayim. One of the items that is excluded in the Mishnayot at Masrot and the Gemara in Eruvin is water. Water cannot be purchased with monies of Maaser Sheni. So this is considered to be water. You can't use Maaser Sheni to purchase it. So over here, it says that Temed, before it ferments, cannot be purchased with Maaser Sheni, or in essence, it's saying that it is water. Uposel et hamikveh. And if there's water that goes into the mikveh, then it will be posel the mikveh. A mikveh requires 40 sa'ah of rainwater to be captured in a single location. The waters, if they're brought there as maim shuvim, means drawn water, those are problematic. Until the mikveh reaches 40 sa'ah, if you have a 3 log of maim shuvim, that would be posel the mikveh. Once the mikveh already has 40 sa'ah, then there's no problem of adding maim shuvim or maim shuvim going in there, maybe up to a limit, but generally there's no problem at all. Before it is a kosher mikveh, there's a gzeret chachamim, in all likelihood it might be a din d'oraita, of the fact that 3 log of maim shuvim go into the mikveh, it's posel the mikveh. So once again here, this maim, this temed, is classified as water because it has yet to ferment. And if it's added to the mikveh, it would be posel the mikveh. On the other hand, if you have things that are not water that are added to the mikveh, they're not posel the mikveh. They're not classified as maim shuvim. So if it was wine, it wouldn't have been problematic. Mishich mitz, once it already ferments, nikach bekesef maser, then it can be purchased with maot maaser sheni, because now it's not water anymore, it's wine or some form of wine. Veinu posel et hamikveh, and it's not going to ruin the mikveh. This Mishnah follows the pattern that we've seen until now, which is this idea that at certain times something is true, and other times just the opposite is true. In all the previous Mishnayot, as Rashi points out, they were two different items. It wasn't the same item. It was this item versus another item. They had opposing halachot. Here we have within the same item, we have a distinction. Meaning within temet, before it ferments, it's this. After it ferments, it's this. It's the exact opposite of what it was beforehand, but it's the same item itself. All right, we're going to now deal with the Gemara's explanation of that part of the Mishnah. Again, we dealt with before the second half of the Mishnah, which the Gemara will not explicate on, which is the Maaser Behema and the Kalbon. So Mani Matnitan, who's the author of our Mishnah? Lo Rabbi Yehuda, velo Rabbanan. It's not Rabbi Yehuda, it's not the Rabbanan. Ditanya, hamitamed. Here's the active verb of making temed, that is hamitamed. Venotein mayim bemida. He put in a certain volume of water, umatsa gedei midato. And then out comes the same volume of water. The assumption would be if you passed water through shmarim, or you passed water through chartzanim, and it picked up something from those items, that the volume that came out would be greater than the volume that went in. The fact that the volume is exactly the same that went in and came out, then it's some indication that maybe nothing happened in the interim. So that is patur, according to the Tanakam, according to the Chachamim. Rabbi Yehuda michayev. And Rabbi Yehuda says that it is chayav. Now, we'll see again that this might have to do with the number of items, first of all, whether you're chayav in trumot masrot, to be mafrish from these items. Are you hosela mikveh with these items? These are different things that come up as to the status of whatever we have here. So the situation that we have here is a question about trumot masrot. Do you have to take off Trumot Masorot? And here we have Machloket Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim with regards to whether you do, when the volume that came out was the same volume that went in. So Mani, who's the author of our Mishnah? Rabbanan, according to the Rabbanan, Afa Gav Dechmitz. The Rabbanan make no distinction as to whether it was just the water or if it fermented already. They think it still has the status of water. So then our Mishnah is not relevant. Our Mishnah says the status changes when it ferments. Rabbi Yehuda, Afa Gav Delo Yechmitz. Rabbi Yehuda never qualifies and says whether it is or is not Mechmitz. He simply says the water's passed through these items. On the other end, it's considered to be wine, and you have to take off Trumot and Masorot from it. So Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rabba Baravua, Bishehechmitz Machloket. He is now qualifying that Breita that we just brought before, which is that that Machloket between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim is subject to being Machmitz. It has to ferment it. If it didn't ferment, then they don't argue. So we have two possibilities. There's no hachmatzah, there's no fermentation. Over there, everybody agrees you're a patur. Even Rabbi Yehuda would agree that there is no din of trumot and masrot. We don't classify it as being peret. We don't classify it as being a fruit. We don't classify it as being anything, substance that would require trumot and masrot, just be water. On the other hand, mishehichmitz, once there is hachmatzah, then we have a machloket, Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim. The Chachamim say it still is nothing. It's still water. The evidence being the fact that the water that exited was the same amount of water that went in, and so therefore we don't assume that anything was added to the water. Rabbi Yehuda disagrees and says that once it is machmitz, then at that point it's an indication of the fact that even though the water went in and water came out with the same volume, there was an exchange that happened in the interim. Some of the water that went in got left behind, and then some of the shmarim or some of the chatzanim, what was on them, that residue went out with the other water. So yes, you got the same volume, but by the mere fact that it was machmitz, that it fermented, shows you that something happened. There was a change in this item, and it's no longer classified as water. Then, matnitin, Rabbi Yehuda. And then our Mishnah is authored by Rabbi Yehuda, because now Rabbi Yehuda makes a distinction between whether it ferments or it doesn't ferment. Rabbi Yehuda says, when it doesn't ferment, I agree, if the water that went in and the water that came out is the same volume, then that's indication that nothing happened. First of all, we have the same volume of water. Number two, it didn't ferment. Both of those together show me or evidence of the fact that it's water. On the other hand, if it does ferment, then that's indication, even though the same volume of water that exited was what was put in there, nevertheless, there must have been some exchange that happened, and look, that evidences the fact that it did ferment over here. And therefore, Rabbi Yehuda will be the author of our Mishnah in that distinction between echmitz and lo echmitz. The machloket that we brought in this bright between the Chachamim and Rabbi Yehuda is in a case where there was fermentation. Absent fermentation, even Rabbi Yehuda agrees that they don't have a classification of temed or of peire, and therefore they're not subject to trumot umasrot. Tosafot over here qualifies that statement and says b'shechmitz machloket lav dafka b'shechmitz. That's not necessarily when it actually fermented. Helakemish is sofol hachmitz afagav delo hachmitz. He says as long as it has the capacity to be hachmatzah, then that's enough. The distinction here is whether it has the capacity to be machmitz or it doesn't have the capacity to machmitz, which means that if it ferments in the end, that's an indication that the water originally was something that was considered to be peri, and there's no distinction between the earlier stages and the later stages. It all has to do whether it does or doesn't ferment. And so therefore, meshechmitz is not literally that it actually had fermented. It means that it has the capacity to ferment. That's enough to classify it as peri, since in the end it will become peri. Uvadai yayin choshev the Rabbi Yehuda, and therefore will be classified as yayin according to Rabbi Yehuda. Both Rashi and Tosafot on the previous Amud indicate that had it been a situation in which you put in a certain volume of water, and that which exited was a higher volume of water, they both suggest that even the Chachamim in that case would agree that you are Chayav in Ma'aser. Because there's clearly Yayin, as Rashi says, Harish Yesh Kan Yayin, and Tosafot says, the Kuli Ama Chayav Afil Lo Yachmitz, even if there's no Hachmatzah, then you still would have a requirement of maaser, because there's a clear indication quantitatively that something has changed in this water, and now it's classified as yayin. They also both point out that even in the situation where when you put in a certain volume, the same volume comes out, and the flavor has changed to a flavor of wine, nevertheless the Chachamim still say you're not chayav in maaser. That is because, as Tosafot says it, yua ba'almahu. It has some sort of acidic taste or flavor that's come in there. You don't have real yayin over here. You just have something that has a touch or a flavor of, but not real inherent flavor, even though we believe everywhere else in the Torah that tam ki ikar makes it that the item is its if, whatever flavor is there. Over here, the original item itself is not necessarily something that is of mamashut, rather kiyua b'alma, and therefore chachamim believe, even in a situation where the tam is yayin and it's machmitz, that's still not enough to generate a chiyuv ma'aser over here. And Tosafot points out that even though you could have suggested, according to this Gemara, that Rabbi Yehuda is not the author of the Mishnah, because over here Rabbi Yehuda is the Chumrah, and in the Mishnah it's the Kula, he says the Gemara must have had some sort of misora that Rabbi Yehuda's din applied both the Chumrah and the Kula. And Rashi points out, in addition, that Tosafot says something similar, Shalohech meets. You could have set up the machloket here between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim when it didn't ferment, and then the authors of the Mishnah would be the Rabbonon, because they would say in the case where it didn't ferment, then it's no good, but they would agree when it does ferment that it is good. Rashi over here says that Rav Nachman didn't want to say that, because Kevin Shalom Matzah G'day Midato, since you only found the same quantity that came out on the other end, then if it's not machmitz, what do you have over here? Even Rabbi Yehuda would not be mechayev. You need something here to indicate to us that something has changed in the water, either the quantity or the fact that it ferments. But without either of those, there's no way that Rabbi Yehuda would be mechayev in this case. And that's why Rav Nachman opted to explain the machloket in the case of b'sheach mitz, which seems more logical, where we can lay out all these different positions. Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rav Avua. Temed shalakho b'kesef ma'aser. If you purchase temed with kesef ma'aser, u'b'lesofech mitz, and in the end it does ferment, kana ma'aser, then it works. You know that the ma'aser sheni monies have kedusha in them. When you purchase something with the ma'ot ma'aser sheni, you're transferring that kedusha from the monies to that food item. And in the transference from the monies to the food item, you now free the monies from that encumbrance to kedusha, and then they can be spent like chulin. Those are then free and clear monies to spend. But that all assumes that you are successful at transferring the kedusha from the monies to the food items. So that's what it says here. If he purchased with kesef maser sheni the temed, and then in the end the temed does ferment, kana maser, then it works, and the monies are now freed from their kedusha. My taima, igle milta lemafreya de perehu. Because at that point of hachmatza, of fermentation, that retroactively indicates that whatever you purchased up front was peire. Ella, matznitin, taktani hechmitz in, lo hechmitz lo. So now, wait a minute. How do you deal with our Mishnah? Our Mishnah says that the case is either it did ferment or it didn't ferment. Dilma, ishavke havi machmitz. Maybe if you left it around long enough, it would have been machmitz. What Tosafot said before was that if it is machmitz, or you know for sure it'll be machmitz, then it's already considered to be temed up front. Over here, the water's gone. It was used already. It's utilized already. We have no idea if it ever would have been or wouldn't have been machmitz. So now the question in the Gemara is, how can you make a statement in the Mishnah that if it wasn't fermenting, then by definition, it's not kesef maser, doesn't work with it. It's not considered to be wine. Is that really true? You have the potential in the future for it to ferment. Had it fermented, had you let it go to the point of fermentation, then maybe you would have had peyre, you would have had wine here, and retroactively the kesef maser would have worked over here. How can you make an assumption just because it didn't ferment that everything's okay? Now, the nature of the question, there's three different views of how to put the question forward. Rashi over here says simply that heche delete kaman, that it's a case where we don't have it here anymore. Nezel bata ruba, just go after the robe, ruba machmitzim him. And the majority of this type of water will ferment. And so over here, now the water's gone. Either it was consumed or the purchaser walked off with the waters. And then we don't know what the status of this money is. So that's the question we have. We have something where we can't test it. We can't have the ability to look at it anymore. Given that, what should have been our assumption? Were you successful or not successful in the transaction? So we should go bata robe. In robe cases, it is successful. If that's the case, how can the Mishnah make a statement that if it's not machmitz, then it can't be purchased with kesef maaser sheni? Maybe it should be okay. If the case where you don't know, where you don't have enough information to make a decision, then even if it wasn't fermenting in front of you, it might be fermenting somewhere else. It might have fermented had you left it to be. Any of those items are possible. That's the nature of the question is according to Rashi. The Baya Tosafot, on the other hand, say, Lav a'eni kachim b'kesef maaser parech. This is not on the part of our mission that says you can't use Maaser Sheni money to purchase such an item that has yet to ferment to bedinu, because that's right. The Eini Kachim Misafek. How can you purchase Temed Misafek, assuming that maybe it will, or even Ala Rov, it will ferment and come Yayin? Ela Apuselata Mikvek Uparich. How come you're posel the mikvah? Because they misafek in lipsol. It tells what goes on to prove that when we have a safek about a mikveh, then we assume that the mikveh is kasher. And so to over here, why are you assuming when that water fell into the mikveh that it was posel the mikveh when there's a potential for it to be machmitz, to ferment and become wine? That should not be sufficient grounds for being posel the mikveh. It says, with regards to using mot maaser sheni, our mission makes sense. Our mission is a lashon lechatchila. It says that don't use mot maaser sheni to purchase this. We would say that even if the robe turned into achmatzah, at this point in time, this is a safek, so don't use that for mot maaser sheni. Rashi deals with that problem by saying, it's not in front of us. He did it already. It's not a question of whether you are purchasing it. You did purchase it. And now the question is, we don't have the information to sufficiently come to a conclusion because it's out of our hands now. But Tosafot says that the Mishnah is written as lechatchila, and given that it is a lechatchila Mishnah, then it makes sense that you shouldn't use maaser sheni to purchase it. The real question is from the Mishnah is the fact that it's posel the mikveh. If it's really a safek, why should it be posel the mikveh? B'makom safek, we're not posel the mikveh. That's the nature of the Gemara's question. The Ramban sees it just as a very straightforward, simple question, which is Mishnah writes, temet ad shelo hechmitz inu nikach bekesef maser, which is a very definitive type of statement. If it's true that there is a possibility of change after time that would change the status of it, then the Mishnah should have qualified the statement and said, wait and see what happens afterwards. And that's what Rashi tries to do, is to eliminate the wait and see aspect of it. But then again, the question relates to why did the Mishnah make a definitive statement when there's a possibility that you're dealing with a safek over here, when the temet is gone. According to the Ramban, up front, the Mishnah should give you that information to help you make the decision properly. So, Amar Rabo, the answer is, Kishishir mimenu bakos v'lo echmitz. He kept the sampler behind in a cup, and that didn't ferment. So now we have evidence of the fact that it didn't ferment, and that's why in our Mishnah, it's either, according to Tosafot, posel the mikvah, according to Rashi, even though it's not in front of us, we're not going to assume that it became yayin because we have evidence that it didn't become yayin. According to the Ramban, this is something where you can't purchase it. It's very clear that this wasn't temet in order to purchase it. Rav Amar, now Rav goes down a different path and says, Hamani, Rav Yochanan ben Nurihi. The way that most of the Rishonim read this is that Rav is now giving another answer how to reconcile Rav Nachman's statement about retroactively being classified as temet versus our Mishnah, which seems to indicate that it's only prospective. How do we reconcile that? And that's through the sheet of Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, whereby the Mishnah will be subscribing to Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri's position, and Rav Nachman is subscribing to those that are cholek on Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, the sheet of the Rabbonon, and that's how we could reconcile between Rav Nachman and the Mishnah. But that does leave the Mishnah intact as being altered by Rabbi Yehuda. On the other hand, the Ramban suggests that Rav is now entertaining another possibility as to who the author of our Mishnah is. The first explanation was given by Rav Nachman, the Rebbe of Rav, who says that the author of our Mishnah is Rav Yehuda, and he's the author of our Mishnah based on the Braita that we brought before. And then we had some issues with regards to that, including the fact that Rav Nachman and Rav Vua say that if afterwards it becomes temed, then retroactively it was temed all along, or retroactively it was wine all along. If that's the case, then why is our Mishnah saying that when it's not fermenting, that it's problematic? Maybe in the future it will come fermented. We answered that there was a sampler cup that was kept, and that gave us the information. Rava now says, let's go a different way and say that the author of our Mishnah is Rabbi Yochanan ben Nurihu. I mean that Rabbi Yehuda and the Rabbanan argue both b'shechmitz and b'sheloechmitz. How do then we explain our Mishnah? Totally new author, and that's Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri. And then again, Rabbi Nachman's statement that is at odds with our Mishnah will be in the position of the Rabbanan and not like Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri. It's not. We have a Mishnah in Mikvaot. Gimalugim Maim Chaser Kortov. You have three log of Maim, missing a tiny amount. Shinafala Tochan Kortov Yain. And then a little wine fills out those three log to make it a full three log. Umarehen Kimare Yain. And they have the appearance of wine. Binaflu the mikveh, and they fall into a mikveh, lo pasluhu. Then they do not ruin the mikveh. Seemingly over here, the reason being is that they're not water. They're wine. If it's wine, wine isn't under this gzeira that three log, mayim shu'uvim, are going to ruin a mikveh. Here it was wine, so it's not ruining the mikveh. Gimalogim mayim, chaser kortov. Similar setup where you have three log of water that are missing a kortov. Shinafala tochan kortov, chalav. And then you have milk that falls into it, umarehem kemarei mayim. And then they have the appearance of water, benaflu the mikveh, and then they fall into the mikveh, lo pasluhum. that doesn't ruin it. Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri Omer, Hakol Olech Achar HaMareh. Yochanan ben Nuri says it all has to do with the appearance of the water. You know, whatever it looks like, that's what it is. That means if it looks like water, it's water. If it looks like wine, it's wine. So in this case, the first scenario, at least the way the gears that we have, we're going to see in a second that Rashi changes the gears a little bit. But here, in the first scenario, you had three log of mayim missing something, then wine falls in, and it looks like wine. Now that it looks like wine, Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri says, no, that's not going to post-sell the mikveh. That's not mayim shuvim going into the mikveh. In the second scenario where it's chalav and not wine, and then the water looks like water, there you're going to say it is posel the mikveh because it is mayim shu'uvim. And it's nekdarik mayim shu'uvim. Even though you didn't have three log of mayim, you have three log of mayim because mar'eh. What it looks like is all that matters according to Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri. According to Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, the only test we have is chazuta, the appearance of the item. Looks like water, it's water. Looks like wine, it's wine. Now, what the Rabbanan hold, which is going to become important because that's going to be the explanation for Rav Nachman's Shita. Here's Rava's Talmid giving the explanation to Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri. Clear that Rav Nachman doesn't think it's Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri over here, but rather thinks it is the Chachamim. What's the position of the Chachamim? Rashi says over here, the position of the Rabbanan is Tartebo. They need both things. Shiura v'chazuta. They need a minimum shiur and appearance. That's the way our Mishnah reads right now. You look at the Mishnah, the first case doesn't posel the mikvah because it looks like wine. The second case in the Mishnah is not posel the mikvah because it doesn't have a shiur mayim. Even though it looks like water, it doesn't have a shiur mayim. So that's the way that Rashi reads it at first. And Rashi says it's very problematic because in the end we want the Rabbanan Shita to be that appearance doesn't matter at all. All that matters is whether you have water or not. And therefore Rashi later on says, V'nir be'enai, the Rava Chasar Kurta of Tani Beresha, M'shum Daleka Shi'ura Kamar Tanakama Lo Pasluhu. And the reason it's Pasul in the first case is not because of the Ma'eh Yayin, but rather because it's lacking in three log of Mayim. Aba Shlusha Lugim Shlemim, Afilo Ma'ehem Kemare Yayin, Pasle Rabbonan. If you have three log of water, and then they appear like wine, meaning that you have three log of Mayim, and then wine got mixed in with them, and it looks like wine now, Lo kapte achazuta, because the Rabbanan don't care about appearance, klal, whatsoever. And in that way, Rav Nachman makes a lot of sense. So the way that we have it in the Mishnah, or the way that our Mishnah reads here, it seems to be there are two problems in the Mishnah. The first one is that it looks like wine. The second one is that it's chaser mayim. It doesn't have three log mayim. And on that, Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri comes to argue and says it all has to do with appearance, nothing else. Rashi says that that's not the position of the Chachamim. The position of the Chachamim is, do you have three log mayim or do you not have three log mayim? Appearances don't matter whatsoever. And therefore Rashi says that the Libi Mahases on the explanation that the first problem is a problem of Chazute and that the Rabbanan require both things, Shiura and Chazuta. And Rashi says he doesn't think that's the case. He thinks that the case here is that it's three log is what the difference in all of these cases. And therefore the Chasar Kurtov in the Reisha is not because of the fact that it appears like wine, that it's not posel, but rather simply the Shiur. In all these cases, the Shiur is what matters, and that's it. So then that allows for Rava to first of all say that Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri is the author of our Mishnah. Now what he is suggesting, and this is, as Tosfot points out, not a simple leap of faith. He's saying Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri says everything's about appearance. So in our Mishnah, we have Temed that looks like water. Temed looks like water until it ferments. Once it ferments, then it is wine. It's not a question, it's wine anymore. So what we're saying is Rabbi Yehuda is following this position of Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri and says that in the beginning, it's water. It looks like water, smells like water, tastes like water. That's water. If it's water, then it's not able to be purchased with Malut Meiser Sheni, and it's posel a mikveh. Then later on, when it's machmitz, when it ferments, then it has a smell, a taste of wine, and therefore it's negdar ke yayin. That's the statement, and what he's saying is that in the beginning, when it's water, even though in the future it will turn into some form of fermented wine, or it will become temid in the future, doesn't matter, because right now, whatever it is, it is. So that's the statement. Now, the Bali Tosafot point out that this isn't exactly along the lines of what's going on in our Mishnah from Mikvot. It says, Rava Balomar, Shafil Shir Mimenu Bakos Vechmitz, Rava says that even if you leave a cup on the side as a sampler, and that does ferment, it doesn't mean that what you have beforehand is considered to be temet. meaning that before the statement of Rav Nachman was retroactively. Whatever you had was considered to be temed when it ferments later on. As long as we know it fermented, then whatever you had all along was wine. Rava says, no, there's a threshold. When it turns into wine, that's wine. Before that point, it's not wine. That's because he's subscribing to Rabbi Yochum and Nuri, who says, if it looks like water, and it tastes like water, then it is water. And then he says, v'hacha nami taima v'chazuta maya. In our case here, in the beginning, the temed's flavor and appearance are water. V'apagab delo dami legamre. The Tosafot points out, the cases are not identical. Dehatam oto chalav, ain't sofo liot botam chalav. The Mishnah mikvot, when you have less than 3 log of mayim and you get a little milk in there, and then it fills out, that milk will never turn into milk anymore. The water that you have it in is not going to change. It's going to remain water. So maybe that's where Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri makes a statement. Gam lo yanikach b'kesef maser, and you can't use kesef maser for it. V'hocha sofo shiyeh botam yayin k'shiyach mitz. Here in the future, it will turn into a fermented temet. And over here, you could have said something along those lines. So what he says is, even though it seems like these cases are different, nevertheless, Rava is saying, according to me, Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri would say such a thing in this case. So even though in the future it will turn into temet, right now, if it tastes like water and it looks like water, it's water according to Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, despite the potential to ferment in the future. Unlike the Mishnah in Mikvot, which is dealing with something that will never change. It is water now, it looks like water, and always will remain water. But Rava is saying, I'm still seeing a parallel, and that Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri would say that in this case. The second thing, which I keep mentioning, is that even though Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri in the Mishnah only mentions chazuta, appearance, Tosafot says it's not just appearance, it's taste. And he says in the next Tosafot, Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri ela chazuta, says even though he only mentioned appearance, he says that you have to say that it also has to do with the tam. So why does he say that? It goes after taste and appearance. It's not just appearance, it's appearance and taste. But he says that's driven by the nature of the Mishnah, not by his position. And therefore, he believes that according to Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, you need two things. You need chazuta, and it has to have not tam of yayin. So even if you have white wine that falls into water, so it clearly has the appearance of water, nevertheless, according to him, it will not be posel the mikveh if it tastes like wine, because that is considered to be wine. You need both. You need to have a lack of taste of wine, and you have to have a mar'eh of mayim. According to the Mishnah, where it says that once it's machmitz, it is classified as wine, but before that it wasn't. I'm always saying before that means it looks like water before that, and it tastes like water before that. That's important, because that's Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri's position. Now, that explains the Mishnah. Rav Nachman's shita is clearly premised on the Rabbanan's view. He holds, like the Rabbanan, that mar'eh is not the impactful item. The question is, what do you have over here? Do you have yayin, or do you have mayim? Do you have chalav, or do you have mayim over here? So they think that shlosh lugim mayim is the only thing that matters. If you have 3 log of mayim, then it's posel the mikveh. If you don't have 3 log of mayim, then it's not posel the mikveh. And then that'll be Rav Nachman's view over here, which is that when it's machmitz in the end, retroactively, we consider it to be temet according to the shita of the chachamim. Because the shita of the chachamim is chazuta, appearance doesn't matter at all. It all has to do with whether do you have 3 log mayim or do not have 3 log mayim. The answer is, well, if it ferments in the future, you didn't have 3 log mayim. If it doesn't ferment in the future, then you did have 3 log of mayim. That's all that matters over here. And that's why Rashi is loath to have the chachamim be explained according to chazuta, according to appearance. These things for the chachamim, that's not meaningful over here, because Rav Nachman never mentions anything about appearance. It all has to do whether it's water or it's not water. It's all to do with the shear. Do you have 3 log mayim or you do not have 3 log mayim? And that's determined by whether it ferments or doesn't ferment in the future. Now, Gemara says, La b'amar Rabbi Yochanan batar chazuta azlinan. Didn't Rabbi Yochanan explain that Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri's position is all about chazuta appearance? Hachanami, zil batar chazuta. So to our Mishnah, we'll go after the appearance. And that's what matters. When it looks like water, it tastes like water, it's water. When it crosses over that line and ferments, that's prospectively becomes yayin. It doesn't affect it from beforehand. Whatever was beforehand was water. B'taima b'chazuta d'hamaya ninu. And both the flavor and the appearance of whatever was in our Mishnah, the temet, until the point that it ferments, was tasting like water and looked like water, and therefore it's not problematic. Upliga de Rabbi Elazar. And this position of Rav Nachman, that we said before, that the machloket between the Chachamim and Rabbi Yehuda was in a case of hechmitz, That argues in Rabbi Elazar. Dama Rabbi Elazar, Makom Odim, Shem Afrishim Alav Mimakom Acher. Everybody agrees that you can't take off Tumot Masrot from it from another item. Elaim Kein Hichmitz, unless it has ferment. Kasavar, he holds clearly, below Hichmitz, Machloket. That the machloket between them is in a case where it did not ferment. He says that everybody agrees once it's fermented that you can take off tumot and masrot from it. Had it not fermented, that's where you have the machloket. Vadkan lo mechayev Rabbi Yehuda elimine uve. And there, Rabbi Yehuda only allows you to take it off internally. Aval me'almo lo. But from somewhere else, you can't do it. Dilma atele fushim in echiyuv ala patur min avatur ala chiyuv. Even if you say that it is a machloket when it's not fermented, Rabbi Yehuda at least acknowledges that there's a possibility that this really isn't temet, or this really isn't diayin. And dealing with that safek, he says that you have to take off the tumat of masrot internally, not use it vis-a-vis any other item, or even other temet. Because every temet is individual and different. Some of them might ferment, some of them may not ferment. So Rav Nachman said that the machlok between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim was only once it's fermented. And even there, the Chachamim said it's still not considered to be temet. Over here, we have Rabbi Elazar saying, well, if it's machmitz, everybody agrees that you can take off tumot masrot from it, from here, from other places. But if it's not machmitz, Rabbi Yehuda is the one who still says that you have to take off tumot masrot. You have to take off tumot masrot internally from the item. But that means that Rabbi Yehuda still believes when it's not fermented, you still have to take off tumot masrot. What changes once it ferments is the ability to take off tumot masrot from other items and from it on other items. That means that Rabbi Yehuda clearly believes that even before it fermented, classified as yayin, but that you can't take it off from other items. You have to take it off internally from this same item, because otherwise you're going to end up with a precarious situation where you're taking off mina chiyuv ala patur, or mina patur ala chiyuv, and as Rashi explains over here, that runs you into big problems. Because someone who's mafrish mina chiyuv ala patur, someone who takes off from something that's chayav ala patur on something else that is patur, machil tevel lekoin. He ends up giving tevel to the kohen. So if this temet is really not chayav, and you're taking off from something else that is chayav on this tevel, then whatever you did in excess on the other item should have been residual and not brought as truma. And therefore, whatever you're giving to the kohen is classified as tevel. And tevel has a din of mita bidei shamayim, because it still has truma embedded in it. It's not taken off. And that's even a mita bidei shamayim the kohen, because it still has the truma embedded inside of it. And vice versa. If you take off something that is patur on the chiyuv, then the balim end up with something that is tevel, because they think they took off truma. The truma that they gave was not truma, but that's nothing wrong for the kohen. The balim that are left behind now eating tevel because they thought they took off from something that was chayav. This was chayav, and the other item was patur. They didn't take off truma, and now you're left with something that's still tevel. So in either way, it's going to be problematic, and you can take it off internally. But the main issue here is that the machloket between Rav Nachman and Rav Elazar about explaining this machloket of Rav Yehuda and the Chachamim. Where Rav Nachman says their machloket is only after it's already fermented. Where the Chachamim say it's still not considered to be yayin because the volume of water that went in and came out was the same. Whereas Rav Yehuda says that once it ferments, that's an indication it's yayin. Rav Elazar comes along and says that's not the case. Their machloket is even when it's not machmitz. When it's machmitz, for sure, they all agree that you can take off tumot and masrot from it. Both from it on other things and other items on it before that point in time, before it ferments, if you require tumot masrot, then you can't take it off from somewhere else. You have to do it on it internally. That shows you that even Rabbi Yehuda, when it was not machmit, he says that it's classified as yayin. And that's the difference between Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Nachman as to where the machloket between the Chachamim and Rabbi Yehuda is. And so based on Rabbi Nachman, the author of our Mishnah is Rabbi Yehuda because Rabbi Yehuda is the one whose position changes once it's machmit. On the other hand, Rabbi Elazar believes that the author of Mishnah must be the Chachamim, because he believes that if in the end it is machmitz, then Rabbi Yehuda believes that in the beginning, even before it's machmitz, it would be considered or classified as yayin. It is a safek until we know for certain that it's machmitz, and that's why he doesn't allow you to take off tumot masrot externally, but only internally. But that means that he thinks, like Rav Nachman before, that when something turns into temet in the future, retroactively, it does have impact over here. The Chachamim obviously disagree with that. And then the Chachamim are going to be the authors of the Mishnah because they are going to say that the Mishnah is a case where shelo hechmitz, there's no chiyuv at all. When it is machmitz, then there is a chiyuv. It is yayin, and then there's a chiyuv of tumot masrot to be taken off of it. And that'll be the difference between Rav Nachman, who says the author of our Mishnah is Rav Yehuda, And Rabbi Elazar, who thinks the author of the Mishnah is the Chachamim. But it shows you that, according to Rabbi Elazar, that their machloket exists even before fermentation. Etanabadan, hatemet, ashlo yechmit, for it has fermented, mishiko b'mayim. Then you can have it kiss the water. Mishiachmit, once it is already fermented, ain mishiko b'mayim. You can't have it kiss the water. What the Braita is referencing to over here is a way to be metaher water in the mikveh. And that is, the mikveh is only successful at being metaher items like adam and kelim. Person goes to the mikveh, they can become tohor. Kelim go in the mikveh, they can become tohor. Food items cannot go in the mikveh. You put food items in the mikveh, they are not tahor. But there is one exception to that, is that water that is put into a mikveh can become tohor. And it's not necessarily because the mikveh is metaheret, it's something called zri'ah. It's the equivalent of planting the water in the ground. For instance, if you have shumat me'ah, if you plant that in the ground and it grows, whatever grows afterwards is tahor. It may still be chuma. That's a machloket whether gedulei chuma or not chuma. But as far as tuma and tahara are concerned, when you take something that's tamei and you plant it in the ground and it roots in the ground, it becomes mechuber the karka, and things that are mechuber the karka don't have a din of tuma. It's over here, we classify it as zri'ah. Zri'ah means that when you put water and water together, they join to become a single entity. Or in essence, the water that you're putting in there joins with the mikveh and is now part of the mikveh. We use this concept actually today to make our mikvot. In our mikvot today, we have a bor, which is the original bor that captured 40 sa'ah in it of rainwater. Obviously, if we only used that rainwater, it would get pretty sullied, the water, and you wouldn't want to enter the mikveh, as the Gemara discusses in many places, that people didn't want to enter the mikvot. That's why they have all these gezeirot about not showering afterwards and things like that, because people were going into the mikveh thinking that they were getting dirty, and then they had to shower, and that was what was making them tahor. The way we solve that problem is we use a concept of hashaka, of kissing, which is that we then fill up another mikveh full of water that has enough in it, 40 sa'ah, whatever amount, maybe even more than that. We don't actually pour in mayim shuvim, we do it through what's called hamshacha. We run it down a solid pipe of cement that allows it to flow into the mikveh. That has to do with the halachot of mikvot, why that's more of a kula than direct mayim shuvim. So we flow that water into that pit. Then there is a little pipe that between the bor that carries the original mayim that was the rainwater and the waters that are now being poured into this mikveh that are not good mikveh waters, we open up that pipe. The joining of the two together basically makes them in the hashaka, the kissing of those two, makes it that the kosher mikveh now is machshir, whatever was in the waters there. Then we seal it up again, and that's it. So now we have our bor there. The water now is kosher mikveh. Kosher mikveh, you can use it. It gets dirty, you drain it out, and you start again, and then you have the kissing again. You do the hashaka again. That's how most modern mikvehs work. Question of how you do hashaka, that's a machloket, including the chabadnikim who are very makvid to do hashaka only up and down. They have a bor on top of a bor, right? So they have to have it below, not next to. Most of our mikvot have them next to the mikveh. There are two adjacent areas, and they do hashaka sideways. Chabadnikim are makvid to have it above and below, that the bor be underneath with the actual water, and then the new mikveh is on top of it. All right, those are all details, but basically it's working the same way that we're saying over here. You have potable water, and you wanted to be able to drink it, but it was tamei. For whatever reason, that water had become tamei, and you want to now make it tahor. If you take it and go to the mikveh, and you put it in the mikveh, it's going to become dirty. If you exchange the water with the mikveh water is disgusting. It's all dirty and sullied already. So there is a way, if you fill up a cup to the top with this water, and then you submerge it in the mikveh, there will be no displacement. The water will remain in place, but there will be hashaka. That hashaka will be mitahir, the water. You take it out, you still have your potable water, but now it's potable water that is tahor through the process of Israel. Had you left a little space at the top of the cup, then that space will be filled by mikveh water, and that's going to ruin all the water that you have in there that's potable. So you fill up a cup to the top, submerge the whole cup with the water in it, and then take it out. Now you have zri'ah, and that's how you make this mayim tohorim. So now we're speaking about temet. The same question that we have before. What is temet? Is temet water? Is temet yayin? If it's water, hashaka works. If it's yayin, hashaka does not work. The problem is that yayin doesn't have this din. It's not butel to the mikveh. It doesn't become one with the mikveh. It doesn't have a din of zri'ah. Only a din in water. It's not a din in other items. That's what the Braita says. A temet, achlo echmitz. Before it ferments, mishiko b'mayim. Meaning, it has a status of water. Mishi echmitz, once it already ferments, in mishiko b'mayim, meaning that it's no longer considered to be water. Amaroba, loshanu ela shit mado b'mayim tohorim. That's only if the temet was made in Mayim Torim, v'nitme'u, and then they became temet afterward. Aval temeim mi'ikara, if the waters were already temet, lo, it doesn't work. So Rava qualifies the Braita and says that, oh, this only works when, if at first you had tahor water, you made it into temet, after it was made into temet, it became temet. In that case, the whole question of whether it works or doesn't work is relevant here. On the other hand, if you had water that was previously temet, and then you mixed it, making it to temet, and now you want to be even taharet, that doesn't work over here, because the waters by themselves were already temet before you made it into temet. What's the difference? Azal Rav Gvia Mevei Katil. So Rav Gvia Mevei Katil, who is an Amora, 5th, 6th generation Amora, meaning in the time of Rava, Amr L'Shmaite Kameh the Rav Ashi, he said over what Rava said to Rav Ashi. Rav Ashi never saw Rava, because Rav Ashi was born the day that Rava passed away. But Rav Gvia Mevei Katil, who did live longer, did see Rava, was a peer of Rava's, but then also saw Rav Ashi, and told over to Rav Ashi what Rava had said. And then, Maishnat Meimi Kara Delo, what's the difference about the original waters that were Tmeim, that if you made that into Temed, you cannot then put it into the Mikveh for Zriya, Damrina, because we say, I did the Maya Yekarire, because water is heavy, Shachne Tatai. They sink to the bottom of the cup, Upeire Kafe, and on the other hand, the temed, or the fruit stuff, is lighter, and therefore they float mileel, to the top. So now you have a problem. Below kasaka, lahu hashaka, the maya. You don't really have hashaka. You have a hefsek between the water and the water. You have the waters of the mikveh, you have the waters of the mixture, and the waters that are at the bottom have an interference of the peire in between. So this is Rav Gvia Mevei Katil's suggestion as to why Rava thinks this way. It's because of the problem that the fruit juices, we'll call them, sit in between. Whatever is there that makes this into temet, that sits in there and is mafsik. Ihochi torim ulusov nitmu nami. If that's the case, why should it be any different when waters were tahor, and then you mix them together? The property of physics should be the same in both cases. Just because the water was tamei or tahor beforehand should have no impact on the physics here. You have water at the bottom, you have the fruit stuff at the top. Why should it matter? Ela mebalbalet. What it's clear is that they mix together. We consider them to be a total mixture and not a separating mixture. It's not like oil and water where they're separating it away. The temet is a complete mixture, and so therefore we're not going to view it as being water distinct from the fruit part of it. It's all water and fruit mixed together, and that means that the water does come into contact with the waters of the mikveh. So achanami. So in the case where it originally was temet, and then you made the temet, mebalbalet, it gets mixed together. It's not clear along the way where this shift happens between Rav Gvia Mevei Katil to Rav Ashi. It could be that it's all said over by Rav Gvia Mevei Katil when he's telling it over to Rav Ashi. Could be that Rav Ashi is asking the question, or it could be that Rav Gvia Mevei Katil gave a suggestion as to what the reason is, and then Rav Ashi rejects that and says, what are you talking about? Why is there any difference? I don't see any difference over here. But either way, in the end, what you see is that they think there is no distinction between whether the mayim was tamei beforehand, or the mayim was tehorim beforehand. In either case, it works. Now, Tosafot says, v'rava, what's Rava's reasoning? You have to come up with why Rava thinks there's a difference over here. He says, v'rava salka date, chi nitme'u mi'ikara b'fnei atzman, enu mu'il lehem ashaka, elu b'fnei atzman. He says, if they become tameh by themselves, then they have to become tahor by themselves. Tosafot suggests that the reasoning for Rava is that how the item becomes tameh is influential in how you can be mitaharet. If water by itself became tamei, then that as a single unit, the only way to make it into zriyah, to be mitaharet, is if you take that water that was tamei and you are zoreya it, you put it into the mikveh and create that hashaka in the mikveh. That is mitaher, the waters that you have. Without that, the waters are not going to become tamei because you've now changed them. You took the waters that are tamei and mixed them into something, and now you have a new item. That new item is not subject to this zriyah or hashaka. On the other hand, if you started out with waters that are tahor and you mix them in temet and then it becomes temet, the unit that became temet was the temet, which is considered or classified as water at this stage. And therefore, since it became temet like this, you can move into heret like that. So Rava just says, however the item was when it became temet, that's how you can be into heret. You can't change its status and then have it be tahor. So if it was just plain water and now you mix things with it, now you have a problem because those mixed things take it away from being water. And then if the stuff's already mixed in before it became tamei, then they're all batel to the water. And it is all water. And it's all classified as water. And therefore, you can put it into the mikveh mitaharet. So that Tosafot says is the logic behind Rava's position. The second thing Tosafot deals with is, what's the difference between this and a person who goes to the mikveh? A person who goes to the mikveh and happens to have some wine on him, or some liquid on him when he goes into the mikveh. We don't say that's a chatzitza, that is a problem for him when he goes to the mikveh. He goes to the mikveh, he's tahor. So how come over there when you have fruit juices or something that's floating between you and the water, that's not classified as being a hefsek or a chatzitza? Yet, over here, we're saying that if the fruit juices floated to the top, it would be a hefsek, it would be a problem. Tosafot says that nira de lo kasha midei, says I don't think it's a problem, de lo dami. If adaya gava de gabra or gava de mono, if you have liquids on the back of a person or on the back of a kli, michalchalei behu mayo, the waters can penetrate them. That means that there's flow through, that they don't mafsik, aval derech hashaka lo. By hashaka, it's not going to work. There's a difference between when you have little liquid on the back of an individual, that little liquid on the back of the individual, the other waters will penetrate or get through it. It's as if there is some sort of free flow between them. When you're trying to do a shakah, that doesn't matter because you need actual connection between the water and the water. And then these other items in between are going to cause a problem because they don't allow for hashakah, even though they might allow for some exchange between them. That's how Tosafot answers it. The Urayim answers by saying that it's a difference in chatzitza. By Adam, when you have wine or something on the back of an individual, he's not makbid on it. And the din, there's a din in chatzitza. When you're not makbid on a chatzitza, it's not chotzitz. The person has a little wine on the back of his back, that they don't care about that. And therefore, the mikveh is able to be mitaharim because of that fact. On the other hand, over here, you have something where water is what works for hashaka. Anything that's in between the water and the water prevents hashaka from happening. The third answer that's brought by the Maram Mirutenberg, escorted by his Talmud in the Tosfot Arosh, which is along the lines, I think, of what you're suggesting, which is that the difference between someone going to the mikveh with items on their back is that when you go to the mikveh, a reason that you tahor is because you're surrounded by the waters of the mikveh. That's what you need. And in this case, you're surrounded by the waters of the mikveh. The wine that's on the back won't change the fact that you're surrounded by waters of mikveh, partly because it's not classified as a chatzitza. On the other hand, by hashaka, that's not the din. The din is not to be surrounded by mikveh waters. It means to be directly in contact with the waters of the mikveh. So in the case of the hashaka, you're not in direct contact with the water. In the case of the person who's going to be mitahir himself, he just needs to be surrounded by the waters of the mikveh. And even if he has some wine or some other liquid on him, he's still surrounded by the waters of the mikveh. It happens to be there's something there, but that something there doesn't make a difference because it's not classified as a chatzitza, and it's still classified as being surrounded by waters. So you're trying to accomplish two different things. One is that you're being surrounded by waters of mikveh. There, these liquids don't change that. The other hand, by hashaka, where you need direct contact between the water and the water, there something will be a problem or will sit in between and cause that chatzitza. All right, next Mishnah. So now again, we're going to take a tour of Shas, and here over here, again, we have numerous items where here in the same individual or the same object, they're different dinim at different times, which is kol makom sheish mecher ein knas, v'kol makom sheish knas ein mecher. Mecher relates to an ama ha'ivriyah. Now, ama ha'ivriyah is the ability of a father to sell his daughter, who is underage, into, we'll call it quote-unquote slavery, but into being an ama ha'ivriyah. The equivalent of an eved ivri for a woman is an ama ha'ivriyah. He has the ability to sell her while she's a ktana. The reason that he only has that ability while she's a ktana is because when she comes of age, she reaches the age of puberty, she goes free from whomever she is sold to. So if she was sold beforehand, she goes free at that point. Clearly, after that point, the father has no rights to sell her if she would go free if she was already sold. So the father's rights only exist from when she is ektana until the time she reaches puberty. That's with regards to mecher. Now again, the purpose of the mecher, the beginning of Parshat Mishpatim, tells us that there are three different outcomes of what can happen with this woman. She can either marry the person who purchased her as a ama ha'ivriyah, marry the son of the individual who purchased her as an ama ha'ivriyah, that's called Yehud, or she could buy her way out from being an ama ha'ivriyah, or if she reaches of age, she goes free. So there are different ways that they will terminate the ama being an ama ha'ivriyah. Knas relates to ones u'mifateh. Someone who's me'anes or mifateh, a woman, has to pay a knas to the father. What age is the woman where the knas still applies? So from this Mishnah, it sounds like obviously, it's not when she's a ktana, because if she was a ktana, she would mechers allowed. And what the Mishnah is saying is, whenever mechers around, knas is not around. Whenever knas is around, mechers not around. So Gemara says, "Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav, Zo Divrei Rabbi Meir." Our Mishnah is authored, or the attribution of our Mishnah is to Rabbi Meir. Aval Chachamim Amru, Yesh Knas B'Makom Mecher. That's not true. The Chachamim believe that there is knas when mecher is allowed. D'tanya, Tana Mibat Yom Echad Ad Shetavi Bet Sarot Yesh La Mecher. A young girl, from the time she's born until the time she reaches puberty, Yesh lamecher. There is an ability for the father to sell her. Ve'ein laknas. But there's no knas during that period of time. Mish tavi betzarot. Once she reaches purity, ashet tivager, until she becomes a bogeret, and as Rashi notes it here, the Gemara in other places notes it, that a ne'ara is from the age of 12, when she reaches puberty, to 6 months later, when she's 12 and a half, where she becomes a bogeret. Yesh la knas. That, according to Rabbi Meir, is a period of time when she has a knas. Ve'en la mecher. Does that mecher, because she's already past the point of puberty, there's no mecher after puberty. Divrei Rabbi Meir. That's Rabbi Meir's position. Shaya Rabbi Meir Omer. And Rabbi Meir says exactly what's found in our Mishnah. Kol makom sheyesh mecher, meaning from day of birth until puberty, ain't knas. Knas doesn't apply to a ketana. Kol makom sheyesh knas, knas applies from the age of 12 to 12 and a half. From puberty until bogeret, ain't mecher, because you're already past puberty, there's no mecher, but there is knas over there. V'chachamim omrim, here's the dissenting opinion, that's what we said before, that this, our Mishnah is Rabbi Meir. The Chachamim dissent, because they say, Ktana mibad gimel shanim yom echad, ad shetibager, yesh la knas. Knas applies not only from the time of puberty till bogeret, but from the time of 3 years and 1 day until she is a bogeret, there is a din of knas. That is knas in mecher lo. Wait, that doesn't make sense. There's a knas then, but he can't sell her? That doesn't make sense. Ela ema ach knas b'mako mecher. There is knas at the same time as mecher, because the Chachamim believe even a ketana is subject to knas. They based it on the Sukkim in Parshat Ki Teitzeh that deals with this. Over there in Parshat Ki Teitzeh, the word Na'ara appears many times without a hey. It's read as Na'ara, but it's spelled Nun Ayin Resh. And there the Chachamim learned from that Kri and Ktiv that the Ne'ara that we're speaking about there is even when she is not a Ne'ara, even when she is a Ktana. Therefore, according to the Chachamim, there are actually three different stages. There's a stage from the day she's born until the day 3 years old. During that period of time, there's Mecher. She can be sold. But there is no knas because she's not ru'uya the biya yet. Then there's a period of time from 3 years and 1 day until 12, until she's reached puberty. During that period of time, there's both knas and mecher. Both things apply. Then there's a third stage from 12 years and 1 day until bogeret, where knas still applies and mecher does not apply. But it's clear that there's a window of time from 3 years and 1 day until 12, where mecher and knas do apply together. And that's why, obviously, they disagree with our Mishnah. They don't agree with what's stated in our Mishnah. Right, go on, next Mishnah is, Kol makom sheyesh miyun, ein chalitza. Kol makom sheyesh chalitza, ein miyun. Wherever there is miyun. Miyun is the ability to divorce midrabanan. The Rabbanan instituted the ability of a ketana, a girl who is underage, for whatever reason no longer has someone who can marry her off. That's either because she was married off once before, and then divorced, and she was married to Oraita, her father can marry her off to Oraita when she's a ketana. If she was divorced from that marriage, she's now a yetuma b'chayeya viha. She's an orphan, even though her father's alive. Or it could be that she really is an orphan, that her father has passed away. Once her father passes away, her own actions are not efficacious to create a kiddushin midoraita, because she's a youngster, she's underage. So then Chachamim empowered her brother and mother to act on her behalf to marry her off. In order that the girls don't become hefker, or that she has the ability to get married, in that the marriageable age was obviously significantly lower at that time, and so leaving her without the capacity to get married would have been very difficult for her. So we allow the mother and brother to act on behalf of this girl, obviously with their acquiescence, to get married. Now, even if she does acquiesce, the marriage is only midorabanan, because midoraita, you can't generate kiddushin without the father, because she's underage. So that kiddushin midorabanan can be dissolved. It has a dissolution, which is called miyun. Miyun means that she simply says, in ritzoni, I don't want to be here anymore. I don't want to be married to this individual anymore. She can walk away, and the marriage is dissolved, even after she's living with him. As long as she hasn't lived with him after the age of puberty, she hasn't lived with him as a gdola, then in that instant, she can walk away from the marriage anytime she chooses. And there's miyun. The question of whether you can have multiple miyunim, because she get married again and then have miyun, or once she does miyun once, we say that's it. You're out, and you have to wait until you're a gdola in order to get married again. That was machlokes Beit Hillel, Beit Shammai, other places. Miyun is all a concept derabanan. Chalitza is a dissolution of the necessity to marry the brother of the deceased husband when she was a yivama. She can dissolve that through chalitza. But a chalitza is only available to a woman who's of age. And that's because by the parshia of Yibum, it says ish. And ish, we also say, means isha as well. It means that they have to be of age. Both the man and woman have to be of age in order to perform Yibum midoraita. So here you have two mechanisms for dissolution. You have miyun, and you have chalitza. Miyun is a dissolution derabanan. Chalitza is a dissolution midoraita. And what the Mishnah says is, when you have the capacity to do miyun midrabanan, you don't have the capacity to do chalitza midoraita, because mion is only applicable to a girl who is underage, someone who's below the age of 12. She has the capacity to do mion. Chalitza only applies to a woman who is a gdola, when she's over the age of puberty. And there's the same thing in reverse. Chol makom sheyesh chalitza, if she can do chalitza, then she's too old to aim mion. She can't do mion. So they are mutually exclusive in their time periods, because the din d'rabbanan only applies when she's a ktana, the din d'oraita only applies when she is a gdola. Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, zo divrei Rabbi Meir. Once again, this is the shita of Rabbi Meir. Aval chachamim omrim yesh mion b'makom chalitza. On the other hand, the Chachamim over here, which is not going to be the Chachamim, it's going to be Rabbi Yehuda, believe that there is Miyun, there's an overlap in the period of time between Miyun and Chalitza. The Tanya, Ad Mataya Bat Mema Enet, until what period of time are you allowed to perform Miyun? Ashita Vishte Se'arot, Divi Rabbi Meir. Meir is very clear, it's just, she becomes of age, Miyun's no longer available to her. She is a Ktana, Miyun's available to her, Chalitza starts at that point, so that's why they're mutually exclusive. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Ashi Yivea Shachor Ala Lavan. Yehuda has a more extensive requirement, which is not when she has shtei se'arot when she reaches puberty, but when the area of the pubic hair becomes darker than the white. The white is the skin. There's more hair. The Gemara Nida will even qualify that and say it doesn't really mean that she has to have lots of hair in that area. It just means that the two pubic hairs are very long so that they cover over the area and it looks darker and that they make it much smaller than machloket. What's clear is that Rabbi Yehuda allows Mion to go past the point of her being a gdola. There's a slight window after the point she's a gdola, where she can still do miyun, and chalitza already starts from the time that she is reached the age of puberty, age of age. And therefore, there's this small window of overlap between miyun and chalitza, where even though she's of age, where she can perform chalitza, nevertheless, she still has the ability to do miyun beyond that point. Now, the Gemara also qualified that in Nida, and say that's as long as she hasn't slept with her husband after she reached the age of puberty. If she slept with her husband after she reached the age of puberty, then that consummates the marriage, midoraita. And then there's no ability to do miyun. It's just this residual time where she has to do miyun. As long as she hasn't consummated midoraita, she can still do miyun. She consummates doraita when she's a gdola, has bia when she's a gdola, then she has to use divorce. Get is the only way out of that situation. Okay, next Mishnah. Kol makom sheyesh tkiya ein havdala. If you're blowing the shofar, you're not doing havdala. Kol makom sheyesh havdala ein tkiya. Anytime that you have havdala, there is no tkiya. But the reference here is to the Mishnah in Sukkah. It appears also in the Gemara in Shabbat, that on Erev Shabbat, they used to blow a shofar in order to stop the people doing melacha. There it says there were six different series of tkiyot that were blown. The first three had to do to warn the people out in the fields to start coming in, to close up shop. And then the latter three were the items for people in the houses to slowly shut down and to start Shabbat. The equivalent of what we have today in Israel, the siren that goes off, that's what they had the tkiyot back then that gave people that warning. Just interesting from an archaeological standpoint that on the southwestern corner of the Beit HaMikdash, which faced towards the newer city and the fields in the time of Bayit Sheni, they found a stone that fell off of there. And on the stone, it's written Beit Kiyah. And that over there on the top of the southwestern corner, they suggest that that's where they blew the shofar for Erev Shabbat based on that Mishnah and Sukkah. And that's why it says Beit Kiyah on the stone that's up there, because that was the place where they blew the shofar to face out towards the people on Erev Shabbat. So anyway, that's just from an archaeological standpoint. It's very interesting. So now, here the Mishnah is speaking about a case where you're blowing the shofar going into Shabbat. Rashi posits in other places that it's not only for Shabbat, it's also for Yom Tov. It's based on our Mishnah over here. There's nowhere in the Gemara or the Mishnah it indicates that this was true in Yom Tov as well. Ella, because our Mishnah says over here, the circumstance of situation seems like they did do it on Yom Tov as well. The Rambam has an interesting formulation. It says they also blew the shofar after Shabbat, make it for Abdallah. That's also not found in the Gemara. The thing that we won't discuss, but I'll send out a cord on it, is exactly what was the tkiyot. Was it a tkiyah and a truah, tkiyah, truah, tkiyah? That's also a subject of machloket rishonim as to what exactly was the nature of it, and part of that's influenced by our mission over here. The third thing, again, which we won't have a lot of time to discuss, is what's the impact of this on lighting candles on Erev Shabbat? Whether lighting candles, are you mekabel Shabbat automatically when you light the candles? That's the last melacha that you do, and by definition, when you do, that's Kabbalat Shabbat. Or even after you light the candles, you can still do melacha, because that's not an automatic Kabbalat Shabbat. That also relates to this issue of the sixth tkiyot, because the Mishnah in Sukkah and then the Gemara in Shabbat says the last tkiyot, when they blew it, they still were doing the final things of melacha. It tells you, do these melachot at that point in time. The question is, what does that mean? Does that mean that after that point, they were still doing melachot, even though that was the final tkiyot? And how closely correlated is lighting candles to that final tkiyah? So that also is influential. Over here, we're dealing with the issue of Yom Tov, Shekhal Yom Erev Shabbat. Yom Tov going into Shabbat. Tokim velo mavdilim. Over there, you don't make Havdalah. Going from Yom Tov into Shabbat, there's no Havdalah because you're increasing the Kedusha. You're not decreasing the Kedusha. On the other hand, you have to blow the shofar because until now, Melechet Ochel Nefesh were allowed. Now, the Melechet Ochel Nefesh is no longer allowed. So you need to have a Tkiyah to indicate that there's an Iser Melacha coming up. B'motzei Shabbat, if Yom Tov falls out after Shabbat, then Mavdilin. There you do Havdalah because you're going from Kedusha Chamura to Kedusha Kala. But lo tokim, you don't blow the shofar because you're not upgrading your kedusha, you're downgrading the kedusha. Kate said mavdilin. What is the Abdullah? Hamavdil ben kodesh to kodesh. This is what we otherwise know. Whenever Yom Tov falls out on Motzei Shabbat in the kiddush, as part of the kiddush of Yaknahas, we make a bracha of ben kodesh the kodesh, not ben kodesh the chol. Rabbi Dov Somer ben kodesh chamur the kodesh akal. From the more stringent kedusha to the lighter kedusha. We don't paskin, the Gemara is going to say it like this, because it's a little bit of a denigration of Kedushat Yom Tov to say Kedushat Chamur about Shabbat and Kedushat Kal about Yom Tov. Hecha tokea, Amir Yehuda, tokea umariya, that he blows a tkiya umariya, mitocha tkiya, that he blows the tkiya but doesn't stop the tkiya turns into a trua. So instead of being two separate kolot of tkiya trua, they do a tkiya trua, like right through. Rav Asi Amar tokea umariya b'nishima achat. They blow in one breath, he blows both a tkiya and a trua. From what Rashi says over here, it sounds like he takes a pause in between. He just doesn't take a new breath, he just pauses between them. So as opposed to the view of Rabbi Yehuda, where it's one long kol that switches from tkiya to trua, for Rashi, there is a break between the kolot, but there's no new breath that's taken over there, which is going to make them shorter, obviously. Some suggest that the difference is that Rabbi Yehuda says you blow half a tkiya and half a trua. Whereas Rav Asher says you blow a full tkiya and a full trua, you just do it with one breath. But whatever it is, it's different than the normal way you do it, and that's to indicate that there's something different. Itken Rav Asi b'chutzal kishmatei. And Rav Asi in chutzal, outside the Mikdash, established it like his position, which is that they were tokeya umariya b'nishima achat in these situations where it was Yom Tov on the Erev Shabbat going into Shabbat. Meitevei, Yom Tov shechal liyot b'Erev Shabbat tokim b'lo miriin. My love, lo mirin klal, sounds like you do tkiot, but not truot at all. Lo, Rav Yehuda mitaretz the tamei, Rav Asi mitaretz the tamei, each one according to their reasoning. Rav Yehuda mitaretz the tamei, lo mirin bifnei atzma, el mitocha tkiya. You don't do a trua alone, but you do it out of the tkiya. Rav Asi mitaretz the tamei, lo mirin bishtei nishimot, it's not two separate breaths. El v'nishima achat, you blow it, and obviously that would lead to, first of all, a shorter tkiya and shorter trua if you have to do it all out of one breath. And number two is that in one breath, it also come closer together. It won't be separated. But that is a difference to indicate that this is unique. This is different than a normal Erev Shabbat. Over here, you're going from Yom Tov into Shabbat. Ubamotzei Shabbat. Heiche Amarla. Where do you say Hamavdil ben Kodesh, the Kodesh? So Amar Rav Yehuda bechatimata. That's the way you end Havdalah. V'chein Amar Rav Nachman bechatimata. In the conclusion. Rav Sheshet Brei Rav Yehuda Amar Achbu Tichata. Even in the opening, you have to say, Hamavdil ben Kodesh the Kodesh, not Hamavdil ben Kodesh the Chol. The late Hilchot Tokavatei, and the Lach is not like him. Because the reason that we mentioned the Havdalot in the beginning of Havdalah has nothing to do with Mavdil ben Kodesh the Chol, but it has to do with we list all the Havdalot that we find in the Torah. There's Hamavdil ben Kodesh the Chol, Ben Or the Choshech, Ben Yisrael the Amim. And Rashi gives you the Psukim for each one of those. These are separations or Havdalot that are mentioned in the Torah. That list is independent of what type of Havdalah you're making. Ben Or the Choshech, not necessarily related to Shabbat and Chol, but nevertheless, we mention it because those are all the Havdalot of the Torah. And so on Yom Tov, even though Ben Kodesh the Chol is not necessarily relevant over here because you're going from Shabbat into Yom Tov, nevertheless, the structure of the Brocha is the three Havdalot of the Torah, which is Ben Kodesh the Chol, Ben Or the Choshech, Ben Yisrael the Amim. Then Bayom HaShvi'i Sheyed Maaseh is a repeat of Ben Kodesh the Chol, and that's how you end Chatimata Ke'en B'tichata, and then you end either Hamavdil Ben Kodesh the Chol on a regular Motzei Shabbat, Mavdil ben Kodesh to Kodesh from a Motzei Shabbat going into Yom Tov. And we add in the phrase ben Kedushat Shabbat, Kedushat Yom Tov, Hivdalta, because of the Deya and the Gemara and Psachim, that the closure has to be Me'en HaChatima, which has been Kodesh to Kodesh. And then we add in two additional Dalot, which gives you a total of seven. The Rebbeinu Tam says, at least during one time, we have the possibility of saying all seven Havdalot that are found for the Beit Yosef in Siman Taf Ayin Gimel. Of those, Omer ben Kodesh Chamor, the Kodesh Chal, let Hilchot Kavatei. Again, we say that Allah is not like him because it's a little bit of a denigration of the Kedushav Yom Tov. I'm Rabbi Zera, Yom Tov Shekhal Yod Be'emtza Shabbat, Yom Tov on a weekday. Omer HaMavdil Ben Kodesh L'Chol Ben Or the Choshech Ben Yisrael L'Amim Ben Yom HaShvi'i L'Sheyed Maaseh even though none of that is relevant to Yom Tov in the middle of the week when you have to make Havdalah, my taima, Seder Havdalot Humoneh. He's going by the Havdalot that are found in the Torah, which is the Torah it says to us, Parshat Shmini, it says, Labdil ben HaKodesh uben HaKol, and it says, Vavdil etchem min ha'amim liot li am segula, is mentioned in Sefer Vayikra, where there you have Havdalah between Yisrael and Amim. Then Or LeChoshech is in Ma'aseh Bereishit, that we have that Havdalah that's there. And again, Yom HaShvi'i LeShishi Ma'aseh is just a repeat of Ben Kodesh LeChol. And so even though this has nothing to do with Yom Tov, nevertheless we do it. The Meiri points out that we have the Havdil Ben HaKodesh HaKodeshim is said about the Parochet. And therefore we also have a paradigm for Ben Kodesh LeKodesh as well. Okay, we're going to stop here at the end of the parak.